Well, the co-chief executive officer of Whole Foods Market made news not long ago when he criticized and called President Obama's health care reform as fascist during an interview on NPR's Morning Edition. John Mackey triggered a firestorm with his comments, and the distraction took the focus off what Mackey wanted to focus on, which was his new book, Conscious Capitalism, and his Whole Foods brand. John Mackey was to be on the show today. His publicist canceled his appearance a day ago, but his co-author, Raj Sisodia, has agreed to come on the show. Conscious Capitalism makes the case that capitalism isn't all bad and can be a driving force for good. Raj Sisodia is the co-founder of Conscious Capitalism, Inc. and a professor of marketing at Bentley University. He's the author of 7 books and appears in town tonight with John Mackey. And Raj, so nice to have you here. Welcome to Kansas City.
Thank you, Steve. Delighted to be here.
Well, I'm guessing the publicity about John Mackey's comments about the president's health care plan and the reaction they got weren't what you two had in mind when it comes to a publicity rollout for your new book.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a distraction. And,
yes, a bit. You know,
to put it mildly.
Yeah.
But I think the core message here around the role of free enterprise and the importance of preserving economic freedom, I think, was behind that. And recognizing that
recognizing he did walk back those comments, I guess.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And that's a loaded word, and everybody realizes that, as well does John. But the broader theme that we're addressing here is really about this institution that we have all grown up with. You know, they say that fish are the last to discover water. So those of us who have been fortunate enough to live in a system that allows freedom, economic and political, sometimes start taking it for granted. And we don't understand what actually makes it work. And therefore, we may be doing things. You know, one of the statistics we find that the U.S. used to be the third most economically free country in the world just 11 years ago. And now it's the 18th ranked.
What does that mean?
The amount of economic freedom that, you know, that you don't have excessive amounts of regulation, restrictions. How difficult is it for you, if you get a great idea to start a new venture, how difficult is it for you to go out and actually make that happen?
So it used to be easy, and now it's a little tougher.
It's significantly tougher. It's become much more challenging, and therefore our economy loses some of its dynamism. And if you look at the rate of growth in per capita income and some of the other indicators, I think we've suffered. But, you know, that's only part of the story. So, you know, part of it is about capitalism itself and recognizing that here's an entity or an institution or an idea that is really not that old. It's only the last couple of centuries that we really had what we call capitalism, right? Starting after about the year 1800. Really, 1776 is a turning point when Adam Smith published The Wealth of Nations, sort of the intellectual foundations of how markets work. And when we had the United States Declaration of Independence in that same year, you had the coming together of economic and political freedom most strongly manifested in this society. And then you saw the dramatic change. So where for millennia, human beings had existed on this planet in a condition of abject poverty with 85 to 90% living on less than a dollar a day for thousands of years. That was the norm. And our life expectancy was about 30. And there were only a few hundred million of us. And all of that started to change with the Industrial Revolution and then with the advent of free market capitalism spreading. Our population crossed a billion. Our per capita income started to go up from about $550 or so to about $9,000 on a worldwide basis now. 15-fold increase. Our life expectancy has gone from 30 to about 67. You know, illiteracy has gone from 90% down to 15. So lots of progress has happened because of, largely I would say, because of freedom that has been allowed.
Raj Sisodia is our guest. He's a professor and author. You know, you say all that, Raj, and I think people buy it, but boy, these days, capitalism, as you well know, sure, it has become something of a dirty word. People associate it these days with these magnificent bonuses, these multi-million dollar salaries, and regular workers struggling more so than ever before. You know all this. What about that?
Yes, absolutely.
Has the paradigm shifted?
The paradigm has shifted. The world has changed. And also, I think the conceptual foundations of capitalism really were lacking in some ways right from the beginning. It sort of got intellectually hijacked by economists and by the critics, you know, Marxists, etc. So they foisted on it this very narrow identity that it's all about making money and it's all about shareholders. And that really has not been the reality for most people who have a passion to start a great enterprise. They don't do it primarily for money. Money is the outcome of a business well enacted. So this whole idea that the purpose of
business... Well, I think a lot of people do it for money, though.
you know, they have been fed this narrative and it becomes a self-fulfilling one for many. Mm-hmm. But when you start to step back and say, what really drives an enterprise? When you have a CEO and leader saying, well, our purpose is profit maximization, the first thing you see is that employee engagement plummets. People are not really excited and motivated when that is your purpose. But when you say that we are trying to address significant needs that exist in the world and we're going to make the world a better place in this particular dimension. So in the case of Whole Foods, it's about educating people that what you put into your body makes a difference to your health and the mm-hmm. health of the food system and the health of the planet. That is a purpose that people can rally behind.
But if so many Americans, Raj, these days look at capitalism as just the opposite, as purely a profit-driven sort of operation, this notion of companies serving the broader good, I think that idea is just in most people's distant memories now. That's not how people view our system today. I'm wondering what kind of problem does that present then going forward if that's how this country views business?
Well, exactly. That's the dominant narrative, and that has been created as a result of a couple of hundred years of a certain way of talking and thinking and practicing it. But we believe that there's a richer narrative about business, that if you look at what business actually can do and what it has the potential to do in the world, that it is fundamentally based on the creation of value. Businesses do not survive if they don't create value. Businesses are based on voluntary exchange, and to that extent, it's ethical when two entities engage in a voluntary exchange of value with each other. They are not coerced to do so. That business actually allows us, it elevates our existence beyond mere subsistence, and therefore allows us as human beings to explore the deeper and richer things in life. And business alone has been the entity that has lifted hundreds of millions, in fact, billions of people out of poverty. Mm-hmm. In that sense, that's why we use the word heroic. Governments have not done that. Religious organizations have not done that. Nonprofits haven't done that. So we have to understand that there is a richer narrative. It's not about putting a spin on it. It's saying that great, truly great businesses have great purposes. They are trying to do something not only for society, but actually for all of their stakeholders. They are trying to simultaneously create value mm-hmm. for customers, employees, suppliers, communities. And there's a common thread, which is a shared sense of purpose. That everybody believes in that mission, that you know, that goal. So therefore, the business is driven by a much higher level of creative energy as well as passionate commitment.
You know, I'm wondering, as you and John travel the country and talk about your book and the central premise that you're pushing here, Raj, I'm wondering to what extent your message is being received, how it's being received in audiences as you speak to them. Are you getting a lot of pushback? You're getting a lot of criticism, or not? What's been the reception?
It depends. I mean, we get skepticism from some who have that narrow view that that business is all about exploitation and greed and selfishness, and we celebrate that in some ways in the culture and in certain movies. But people who are entrepreneurs, people who are engaged in business, actually have felt somewhat besieged. They are attacked. They are seen as the bad guys, but they're mm-hmm. doing an incredibly difficult thing. You know, trying to create value, trying to create employment, trying to actually compete in a free marketplace, these are extraordinarily difficult things. And when you are at the same time trying to do all those difficult things and yet attacked because a minority, a small number of people out there have exploited, have taken extraordinary paychecks, etc., that is not, you know, what I would call, it was Lincoln referred to the better angels of our nature. What is the highest level of operating, level of consciousness at which we can operate with when it comes to business. When you do that, in my previous research in a book called Firms of Endearment, we looked at 28 companies that fulfilled some of these criteria, higher purpose, stakeholder, conscious leadership, conscious culture, that these companies over the long term actually are far more successful, even in financial terms. Mm. But they are not driven by profit. It's like Viktor Frankl said, happiness cannot be pursued. Happiness ensues. It is the outcome of living a life of meaning and purpose. The same thing when it comes to business. Businesses pursue profit, but profit ensues. It is the outcome of doing a business that is driven by higher purpose, that serves all the stakeholders. When you do that, the profits follow, and these companies outperform 9-1.
Yeah, I'm wondering if businesses have the luxury, in my words, to do what you're talking about, which is to pursue broader goals. once they've established themselves and once they've proven themselves to be successful, as opposed to startup companies, you know, so many of which are just trying to get their feet on the ground and get going. It strikes me that, you know, once you make it, then you can sort of sit back and say, okay, we want to have a positive impact in this way, in this way, in this way. But until then, I'm wondering how possible that is.
You know, I think that's a fallacy, because when you start out on the right side of society, in other words, you don't say, I'm going to figure out how to make money and then I'm going to use that money to good ends later on. What this says is it matters how you make the money. So you start out with a business that is fundamentally on the right side of society, that is actually not creating problems, but actually is part of the solution, is actually creating significant value in areas which are quite necessary. And if you do that, at the same time, you have to have a viable business model. You have to have a strong value proposition. You have to have a good competitive strategy. You have to have efficient operating systems. You have to have good managers, etc. Right. So it's like a train that has two engines, right? So there's sort of a conscious business. It's still a business.
Mm-hmm.
It still needs to meet the payroll and make sure that it, you know, it's able to compete on pure transactional and efficiency terms. But at the same time, if you have that second engine, which has higher purpose, which has, you know, caring for all stakeholders and looking at the interdependence of those stakeholders, which has leaders who mentor and motivate and develop and inspire people, not just command
right.
and control, you find that that becomes an extremely powerful force.
Hmm.
And that especially is seen when the market conditions are bad, right? Just like a train when it's going uphill, you know, you need that extra boost. We find that these companies truly excel when things get tough.
Raj Sisodia is our guest. He's the co-author of Conscious Capitalism. He and John Mackey will be speaking tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Country Club Plaza. Call Rainy Day Books and Fairway for more information, 913-384-3126. And one of Raj's beliefs is that business does more good in society than government and the nonprofit community. I'm wondering if you buy that idea, and do you also buy the idea that capitalism remains a powerful force for good in our society, or has it been corrupted beyond repair? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Again, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Kevin from Mission. Kevin, you're on Up to Date with Raj Sisodia. Good morning.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning.
Great show.
Thanks
very much. Yeah, absolutely. There's so many things to touch on here, and unequivocally, capitalism, you know, could and can be, again, a great force, but it seems clearly that the right wing and Republicans and libertarians and many groups are saying that we're over-regulated and so forth, and quite frankly, the lack of regulation has brought about things like the Bernie Madoff scandal, the Angelo Mozzillo countrywide mortgage fleecing of thousands, if not millions, of Americans, the 2008 financial collapse. And so for anybody, with all due respect to the authors today, claiming that we need to back off regulation rings extremely hollow, if not painful, because so many corporations have their direction as increasing their profit year after year after year, to the point where so many companies, not the least of which, of course, is Walmart and others, call centers, nationwide 24-hour fitness, don't even pay a living wage in the United States anymore. So
right.
it's very difficult.
Yeah. Great points, Kevin. Thank you for calling. Raj?
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think we're arguing that regulation per se is bad, or that
mm-hmm.
any regulation is bad. We need smart, sensible regulations. But at the same time, you know, what we tend to do is we add on regulations. So no regulation ever goes away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we believe it might be a good idea for new regulations to have a sunset clause after 10 years where an independent entity would have to look at the costs and the benefits, because there is a cost. I mean, if you look at the Small Business Administration, which is a government arm, actually, and they've estimated, I'm trying to remember the number is in our book somewhere, the cost of regulation on the economy. I'll have to find that number, but it's in the multiple trillions. There is a burden that is placed on regulation, so we need to be smart about it. And good regulation is good for good businesses. And,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, you know, businesses that are operating in a fair way, in a transparent way, et cetera, they don't want to be vulnerable to the most unscrupulous operators out there, which is what happens when you don't have any kind of regulation. So you need regulation that prevents unscrupulous practices. But at the same time, when it becomes onerous, when you have 1,000-page bills that, you know, even the drafters haven't fully read, and it takes years and years to figure out, all it creates is employment for lawyers, and it creates a sluggishness in the system that really is not serving the public good.
You know, Kevin also raised, our caller raised an interesting point about the 2008 financial collapse. And if you, you know, had to put the world of business on a proverbial scales of justice, I'm just wondering, Raj, to what extent did the 2008 collapse sort of wipe out any potential, you know, the balance of good that business may have done over the years? Because we are still feeling the effects, obviously, and so many folks in this country still in such pain as a result of what happened a few years ago by such a magnificent overreach of business in this country. What about that?
Yeah, so I think it wasn't business overall. It was the financial sector. It was Wall Street.
And
I think in the book, we actually say that this is one sector where most of the criticism is justified. Well, there it has become, you know, overrun by greed, that the amounts of money that people are making are simply unconscionable, and that it has become disconnected. You know, it's okay for people to make money if it is based upon value that they're creating out there in the world. It is not okay if you're making money by exploiting what people are ignorant about, or some information gaps or some narrow arbitrage opportunities, or you're trading on your own account and you're manipulating the market at the same time in order to make a profit. You know, it's passing those toxic assets around and so forth. So,
so how do you get that sector back? How do you bring it back? How do you get it right again?
So, you know, for us, it ultimately,
the federal government has failed in doing that, even in the years since.
You know, I think it comes back to every sector, every industry has a higher purpose, the reason why it exists. I think the financial sector needs to get back in touch with its higher purpose, which is, you know, there are many different forms of financial institutions. There's venture capital that is supposed to fund high risk, high return types of innovative things. There's debt capital, there's equity capital, et cetera. Each of them has to get reconnected to what is its purpose, which ultimately for finance is, can we direct society's savings and resources into the most productive investment so that they will yield the greatest possible benefit for society again as a whole. So when you start doing that, when you start getting back in touch, when you start saying we need to get the financial sector connected back to society and on the right side of society, as opposed to simply trading on their own accounts and making money for themselves. So I think banks and institutions need to get away from this whole notion of trading on their own accounts. They should be there to direct the flow of savings and investments into productive means. And by doing that in a smart way, they should be generating some returns from that.
Conscious capitalism is our topic today. We're talking about the potential for business to do good and where that is these days. 816-235-2888. Back to some phone calls here. And Calvin from Lawrence, you're on with Raj Sisodia, co-author of Conscious Capitalism. Good morning.
Hi. My question is, what role do you think the MBA training programs have in the outcome of capitalism that we all experience, and kind of the rise of cutthroat capitalism and MBA programs in the 1980s versus what you see now in organizations like Net Impact?
The impact of MBA training programs, Raj. Thank you,
yes,
Calvin.
Yes, that's a very good question. And as a business school professor for 28 years, you know, I feel I have experienced that firsthand. I think our business education really has been part of the problem, because we are perpetuating this myth that business is all about profits and shareholders are the only stakeholders who really matter, and that everybody else is a means to that end, employees. And, you know, we call employees resources. Human beings are not a resource. A resource is like a lump of coal. You know, you use it, it's burned up. Human beings are a source. We can generate ideas and creativity and passion. So we need to examine the theories that we treat as gospel. There was a wonderful paper that came out a few years ago called How Bad Management Theories Are Destroying Good Management. And that includes things like agency theory, which basically says that you need to bribe managers to do what's right. Essentially, what that means is you give them extraordinary amounts of stock options so that their interests are aligned with those of the shareholders. But what that in fact does is it distorts their world. They undertake short-term actions to increase that stock price because it means millions of dollars in their pocket, whether or not it's good for the company. And 90% of the time, it's bad for the company, those actions. There are other theories as well that are out there, the theory of competition, that we have five forces. You know, it teaches you to treat all of your stakeholders, your customers, your suppliers, your communities, et cetera, as potential threats and competitors. And you're trying to erect these barriers to competition in order to be able to create value for your investors. That is not the way we need to think about business in the future. So part of our mission with the conscious capitalism movement is also to change business education. I teach a course on conscious capitalism for MBA students and for undergraduate students, and a number of other schools are starting to teach that. We think this book will serve as a resource for that.
Are your students buying it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We're finding that there's a hunger out there, especially among the younger people. You know, you look at the millennial generation and the ones that are following. They recognize that business as usual, or the way that we've been doing things for the last 1,500 years, cannot continue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've accumulated all of these crises now, right? Whether it's energy, whether it's food issues, whether it's housing issues, whether it's water. We cannot continue business as usual. And therefore, we're going to have to start to think differently about the role of business in society and the trade-offs that we tend to make between creating financial wealth on the one hand and destroying other forms of essential wealth on the other hand. We cannot have those trade-offs. We have to have businesses that simultaneously create financial but also intellectual, social, cultural, emotional, ecological, spiritual, physical well-being for all their stakeholders, rather than this old view that we can create financial well-being for investors and everything else is a side effect. Like you take medicines, they've got a long list of negative side effects. There's no such thing as a side effect. You do things, they have effects. And we can do business with a spectrum of positive effects if we adopt a higher consciousness about it.
Speaking of trade-offs, Jennifer from Prairie Village wants to talk about the environmental negatives of doing business. And again, our topic this morning, conscious capitalism, the potential for business to do good in our society. Jennifer, you have the floor. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just wondering, you know, what you feel the role of business, especially very big businesses, are in the environmental arena. Because right now, you know, there are so many businesses that seem like they're really actively working against environmental regulations, you know, and there's the really difficult thing for me is that they're so wealthy and powerful that almost no one can stand up against them. You know, they're funding, you know, the studies. They're, you know, they're paying presumably our lawmakers. And so I'll leave the comment and I'd like to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Yeah, Jennifer, thank you for the good call.
Yeah, I think the environment is clearly a critical stakeholder. It's kind of a silent stakeholder. And a conscious business thinks of the environment as a very important stakeholder and simultaneously, therefore, looks to create a positive value for that stakeholder along with customers, employees, etc. And most of these businesses that are conscious businesses do that. You know, they recognize that in order to be sustainable, not only do you not have to harm, but actually you can look to restore to greater health and vitality, the environment that that we exist in. And just to give an example of a company, Waste Management. Now, here's a company that has 280 or so landfills, and all they used to do was basically take your stuff and take it out of sight and out of mind, and you don't have to worry about it, and but hundreds of years it's going to be sitting somewhere in a big hole.
Yeah.
And their new CEO a few years ago came in and said, you know, there's a tremendous amount of value in that waste stream, and actually now they're recycling and they're generating energy. And they're creating, you know, they haul away about $10, $12 billion worth of trash. That's what they get paid. But they're finding there's $10 billion worth of value in that trash. And it's a win-win.
Yeah.
It's going to create more value for their shareholders. It's going to greatly reduce the amount of things that get wasted. They're actually now helping companies like Walmart and others get to zero landfill. You know, the goal is zero landfill waste, right? And ultimately, everything that comes out actually gets repurposed and reused for multiple purposes. So there is a... You know, there's an enlightened self-interest in all of these elements. When you start to think of these as valuable stakeholders, then you start to find win-win solutions. And clearly the environment is one of the most critical ones, and all of us have to recognize that.
Well, Raj, we'll have to leave our conversation there. Thank you so much for coming in today. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Again, Raj Sisodia is the co-author of Conscious Capitalism, Liberating the Heroic Spirit of Business. Raj and his co-author, John Mackey of Whole Foods, will discuss their new book, Conscious Capitalism, at 7 tonight at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Call Rainy Day Books in Fairway for more information, 913-384-3126.